It's quarter after one. It is Dan and Jake here, and for the next half hour or so. Half hour? Are we good with that? People?
Yeah.
Are we good with half hour? Okay, I want to ask your people.
Do it off the air.
Insult
Be a pro.
You. Yeah, I think we already had it set up. I would never have put you on the spot. This is the great Adam Carolla, who's in town. And I'm trying to figure out where.
The Sheridan.
Oh, okay.
Tickets available at adamcarolla.com. A little live podcast.
I knew adamcarolla.com. But anyway, thanks for coming in. Love it.
Thanks. My pleasure.
And at adamcarolla.com, you could sign up for like a whole big bit, right?
Yeah, I'd say.
A whole...
you should go to adamcarolla.com. Well, we're doing a concert with John Popper from Blues Traveler tomorrow night. So Saturday at the Sheridan, I'm going to do stand-ups. I'll open. Actually, John is going to do 5 minutes of stand-up to open, which should be funny and or interesting. And then I'm going to do about 40 minutes of stand-up, and then he's going to do a whole Blues Traveler set.
Has he done stand-up before?
No, but he does tell stories in between songs and has done it for many years. So he's pretty adept at kind of talking to the audience without the music playing. But this is a little bit different than what he's used to.
What's your stand-up history? I know you've done, you know, your podcast shows, and they're very unique. But I wasn't familiar with you doing stand-up.
I wasn't really a stand-up traditionally. I started off doing stand-up at the very, very beginning and then immediately kind of morphed into improv and sketch and radio. And I got into 1,000 different things, TV and stuff like that. So I never really got back to the stand-up. But after I got done doing terrestrial radio and television and stuff like that, I started to get back into stand-up. So I've been doing it for, I don't know, the last 12 years or something like that.
Okay. And I've always thought that's really difficult. And I love you doing your radio show and the podcast. And a lot of that is because you can kind of do the same thing, but you change it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The same themes, but where stand-up, you kind of almost have to hone a beat for a certain joke and tell it the exact same way in different places. Do you do that? That's hard to do.
Yeah, I didn't used to do that. I used to do a lot more like crowd work and improvisational stuff. But a couple of years ago, I was sort of determined to discipline myself to really work a joke and work out the nuances of it and get it right. And, you know, it's not verbatim, syllable for syllable, but I do just straight stand-up now. It's not, you know, it's not a hybrid of improv and stand-up, or just walk out and do an hour of straight stand-up. Yeah.
Are you always jotting down notes and things?
Yeah, I do. I do tend to jot down a lot of stuff. Also, I do 100 hours of podcasting each week. So I can kind of find things that I said within the podcast and go, oh, that might work if I worked it out on stage.
When were you first approached with the idea of podcasting? Like, obviously, you were doing a morning show for a half decade or so and had been a part of other shows. Did someone come to you? Because we're talking, what, like 2009 at this point? Were you pretty aware of the emerging technology? Did you have to be sold on it? Like, what is this?
No, I was doing morning radio and I became aware that people were streaming my show. They would keep saying, oh, you have 16 million minutes of streaming last month, or some very high number. I remember they would say, I think the Fan in New York, who carries the, I don't know, the Mets and the Yankees games or something, had 20 million. And then you had like 16 million minutes. And I was like, so I guess what that was a bunch of Yankees fans that had moved all over the country and wanted just to listen online to a radio station, you know? So I had a bunch of fans who were Loveline fans, and I wasn't on in their market, and now they would just listen on their computer. So it became, but radio guys are dumb, you know, so I would go 16 million minutes of streaming. That's got to be worth something. They go, no, it's not. Get those ratings up in Los Angeles and, you know, slam the door. And, but it stuck in my head. If people are going to the computer and they're streaming the terrestrial radio show, maybe they would just stream a show, you know, and there were, I'd done a couple other guys. I'd done Bill Simmons' podcast a couple of times, like at the very beginning. It was a kind of in its infancy. We didn't really know what it was, but it just made sense. You know, if it happened, if I lost my terrestrial radio job a year earlier, 2 years earlier, I probably wouldn't have gone into podcasting. And if I would have lost it 2 years later, it would have been no brainer to go into podcasting. But I lost it right at this time where it's like, maybe now, but no one else really saw the wisdom of it. But for me, I was sort of uniquely qualified. I had the info.
Your terrestrial job was, so you took over for Stern, right? Half the Stern stations?
I think a third. I think I took over the West Coast.
Okay.
For Stern.
Wasn't the rest David Lee Roth?
There, David Lee Roth was in East or New York. And
what if we take Grover? A guy who was kind of a good guest,
right,
and just gave him the whole 4 hours?
His own morning show.
Which was the David Lee Roth.
Yeah.
Mark, because everybody knows his name. Who knows Adam Carolla's name?
Well, that's probably
the radio suits thought process on that. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that it's about name recognition. I'm trying to think of when it was. I was very recognizable back then. I think it was an east to west and sort of thing. Like, if they were smart, they probably would have just moved me or asked me to move to New York and do the show and syndicate back toward the west. But they had him do it, and they had Grover. Who did the middle? Somebody did the middle of the country. I think it was Grover. What is it?
I've never heard of
it. Am I saying Grover?
Rover is what he said.
Oh, Rover. I said Grover, and then I said Rover. Yeah, Rover or Grover. He's still in the Midwest.
Why did you lose that job? I don't recall.
David Lee Roth flamed out fast.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to Rover. I did pretty well. I was number one, and you know, people are like, yeah, everyone says that, but I was getting bonus checks for being number one in many cities, and my show was doing pretty good. And then they flipped the format to the radio station, and they just folded the whole thing. And then I had, like, I don't know, 10 months left on my contract or something, and they just folded the whole house.
So when you get right into podcasting, you don't seem like the guy that would be too anxious or antsy about a venture like that, but it is a pretty big deal, especially 13 years ago. Were you, like, fully confident that was going to work out, or was there some, because I don't know what your personal financial investment was, and that's a huge part of it.
We're right on my 14th anniversary. I think it's coming up like 3 weeks or something.
Congrats.
Yeah. So it was 14 years ago. I didn't have any thoughts about it. I was just like, this seems like the right thing to do. I've never really been that calculated career wise. I was just like, I'd like to do this, or I don't want to do that. And I would just kind of do or don't do what I wanted to do. And so I had about 10 months paid on my contract to go. So I was going to be floated for 10 months. I didn't have to really worry about it, but then after the 10 months there was going to be zero money. So in my mind, it was like, you got 10 months to try to get this thing working in some way, shape, or form.
Two things I need to thank you for from my youth. I'm 37, Adam. I had to buy a lot of new pairs of socks from the Man Show, because that was about the only thing that was available at the time.
Sure.
And
yeah. I had the Sears catalog. So
I kept telling my mom
river.
That I'd left him in the locker room or something.
Sure.
That was huge. And then Windy City Heat.
Oh, Windy City Heat.
Big three.
Yeah, that's a weird project we did, and not many people know about it. I'm never sure who's seen it. It's a cult classic. It's a favorite of, you know, guys like Johnny Knoxville and stuff like that. It's like these Hollywood comedians and pranksters and stuff. They love that movie. It's all true. It was all done as you see it. Like, we didn't cheat it. It's a movie about a guy who thinks he's making a movie, but the movie he's making is not the movie he thinks he's making. He's making our movie, and he thinks he's starring in an action film called Windy City Heat. And there's a lot of comedy in that film, and a lot of cameos and just funny appearances. And yeah, that's a true story, and that guy's a guy we've known for a while, and that Jimmy sort of honchoed that, and we got it done, and the ladies at Comedy Central just thought it was too mean and kind of buried it.
It's pretty mean.
But everybody who sees it loves it. Like, I've seen that movie in a packed movie house in West Hollywood, and I've never heard that much laughing in a comedy ever. And it was... And I don't even know where you find it, YouTube or something.
Like, I think I saw it on YouTube there 7 or 8 years ago and was blown away.
Yeah. Oh, someone must have told you to see it, though.
Yeah. Someone, a buddy of mine who actually used to work here, knew the sort
of... Same guy told me to watch it.
Yeah, knew the sort of stuff I was into. And he's like, yeah, you've certainly seen this.
It's just kind of weird, undergroundy, word of mouthy kind of, you know, we made that movie 20 years ago. And it never comes up, but a little bit more and more now, which is kind of interesting. So maybe you kids are out there passing it around like a joint.
This is the great Adam Carolla. Go to adamcarolla.com if you would. That's the way to get tickets, right?
Yeah.
For this weekend show.
Mm-hmm.
And he has graciously, even off the air, we already set this up, that he'll hang out for at least one more segment. And that segment will be called the 1:30 News. You know why we named it that?
1:30.
Yeah.
We're getting the news.
Isn't that crazy?
Get some traffic and weather going, too.
All right, that's next.
Cowboys football is a religion. And here's Jake with the 1:30 News.
All right, thank you, Blake. Thank you, Halo God Guy. Hello, Ham.
Hello, Jake. Hello, Milestone.
Thank you to Milestone. We have a little bit of a follow-up on a story from yesterday, and we do have Adam Carolla in studio with us for the 1:30 News. Go to adamcarolla.com. You click on Working Blue, and you can see all the details for everything that he and John Popper have going on this weekend. Live podcast tonight. I kind of want to talk to you about this.
The K-Rock podcast is tonight?
Podcast tonight, stand-up and concert tomorrow night, and a screening of the K-Rock documentary.
Yeah.
Is that fully your venture?
Yeah. I mean, it's... It's a four-parter. It's not fully complete yet, but we're doing its sort of first screening of it, and I have some like highlights from it and stuff like that. So that's a doc about K-Rock, the radio station I started at, and Jimmy Kimmel and Carson Daly and all sorts of luminaries started at. And it's kind of an interesting how it went from this little garage band kind of nothing station to this big behemoth that broke all these mega bands to whatever the hell it is today. But yeah, I'll be showing some snippets of that and talking through that as well.
Cool. AdamCarolla.com. A little bit of a follow-up on a story we had yesterday, as Alec Baldwin's lawyer has had a chance to weigh in now. After Baldwin was charged with involuntary manslaughter, of course, in the deadly shooting on the set of the film Rust last year. 2021, actually. His lawyer says Baldwin had no reason to believe there was a live bullet in the gun or anywhere on the movie set. He relied on the professionals with whom he worked. He was assured that the gun did not have live rounds. We will fight these charges and we will win.
I support Jack Donaghy. What do you think? A guy who's been on a movie set. We were arguing or wondering a lot about this yesterday. That whole thing. Him being charged.
I talked to attorney Mark Gergos about this on a podcast that I do with him called Reasonable Doubt. And we kind of got into the nuts and the bolts of it. Couple things. He's in trouble as a producer more than as an actor. So, you know, he had a reasonable expectation to think the gun wasn't loaded, because who the hell would hand a hot loaded gun to somebody on a set? On the other hand, they're going to find a lot of, pardon the pun, smoking gun emails of people saying this isn't a safe set, people are unprofessional, we need to save money on the armor, don't get the experienced guy, get the young chick, she's cheaper. And that's kind of where he's going to get into trouble. Like, if he was just showing up as an actor and just had a, you know, like he was doing a bad rom-com from the 90s and just hammering a paycheck, then he'd probably have nothing to do with this. But he's got something to do with the production of it, and the sort of production was negligent, and that may, he may have some exposure because of that.
Is it true that they use actual guns now more commonly on sets than before?
I've heard that they have. Yeah, I think, I mean, nothing looks more realistic than actual guns, and boobs are pretty much the same. They can't, it's hard to do better. They're fake versions, but it's hard to do better than the actual real deal.
Need a big natural handgun.
That's right. That's right. A nice big D revolver. So I guess they do use real guns. I've done a few comedies, so there's not a whole lot of gunplay on the movies I do. But I've heard how it works. And the thing about the sets is there's just tons of protocols. Like, you say things out loud. You hold. It's kind of like being on a ship. You know, and it's like, aye aye, sir, first lieutenant, 10. You know, south by southwest, south by, everything gets repeated and everything is protocoled because they don't want this to happen. So I'm surprised. But I did hear that they were using the same gun and, like, taking target practice.
That's what I read as well.
Out in the desert in between takes and stuff like that. And that's the part where Baldwin may be liable. That part where he's a producer and under his purview, there's people playing around with, like, why do you even have a live round anywhere near that set?
Are you want to hear what we play for an interstitial?
Yes. Sweet.
It's just from Lethal Weapon.
Is that clearable?
we don't ask.
I know the producers of Lethal Weapon 1 through 5, so.
Yeah, just a little sax riff.
Keep it cool here.
I think you'd enjoy our movie of the month. We do a movie of the month, and that was ours last week, or last month. You a Seagal guy?
Who isn't?
Yeah. So Jake picked this month's movie. And
Under Siege.
On Deadly Ground.
We're doing Under Siege.
You can't go wrong with, like, the first six or seven films. But
right. Under Siege?
Under Siege was a big one for
Classic.
Me.
Classic.
We have my dad on the show to pick football games, and that was a big, we're going to dad's for the weekend, rent from Blockbuster, because mom's not letting an eight-year-old watch. Nine-year-old watch Under Siege, but that was a big player for me.
That was a good... You know, Tommy Lee Jones was a tour de force in that movie, and so was Busey. Come on.
Come on.
He was awesome.
So I don't know if you all have kept up with the story of this fella in Massachusetts who has been arrested for killing his wife.
Wait, hold on a second. That's all we're going to do on Under Siege?
Oh, well, I mean, we've been talking about it all day for...
I'll just tell you, my favorite part of every 90s action movie is where they go, this guy's just an orderly, or he's just a cook, or he just works laundry detail. Give me his records. And at some point they go,
oh my
fifth
God.
Degree black belt, special, taekwondo.
Special forces.
Five bronze stars, five Navy stars. He's the only one who was Navy SEALs, Green Beret, and special forces.
My God, this guy's the best.
He's a killing machine. Like, I love the reading of... Because if you read any of my stuff, you'd be like, oh, we can kill this douchebag. Come on.
Right, yeah.
He was put on academic probation at a junior college.
Yeah.
Jesus, come on, people.
I mean, if there's a car that needs fixed, he's equipped, but other than that, like,
there's nothing on the sheet that doesn't make me think one of us can't kill this
and
person.
In the top corner, they also always have, like, their military photo, and it's just square jaw, the hat on, just looking badass, and in a photo of me, I'm, like, half awake at the DMV.
Yeah.
I'm, like, taking a photo. I'm like, oh, I'm so high. Okay, yeah. So this guy in Massachusetts who murdered his wife, or he's been arrested for murder. He was initially charged about a week ago with misleading law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Which is more serious.
Yeah.
That's a charge?
Yeah. Like, okay. If you lie and they can figure out that you lied. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday. How many people are arrested for the first one but not the second?
Like, and doesn't everyone mislead law enforcement? Like, you know why I pulled you over? No, I do not. You know, right, you're doing, you know you're doing 86 in a school zone.
Right, I thought I was going 75.
Anything to drink tonight? No, I have none. We smell of beer. Like, we all
just misled him.
That's all we do is try to mislead law enforcement.
But my point is just, has anybody ever misled and then not been guilty of the crime? Like, is there a guy whose wife disappeared? He didn't kill her. But just for fun, he was like,
I'm going to mislead them.
I'm going to have a zany story here that...
Well, there,
you probably
there,
usually.
I mean, there was OJ. I mean, the guy was leaving
right,
the
and then
Tijuana.
He was innocent.
Yeah. I guess that's true. That's a pretty high profile one. This guy's going to have a tough time because the law enforcement officials have gotten a hold of his Google searches.
Oh, yeah.
So she disappeared on January 1st.
Did he not go incognito?
I don't think that works, Snowden.
Oh.
I think they could still probably get that.
That's all you got to do is... Incognito mode?
Private mode, and no one, the government will never know.
Right. Search how to kill your wife.
So the first search he made on December 27th starts out pretty tame here. What's the best state to divorce for a man?
Mm-hmm. All right, I got that at the top of my browser right now.
But by January 1st at 4:55, things had really started to heat up. How long before a body starts to smell?
Mm-hmm.
How to stop a body from decomposing. This next one here feels like a BuzzFeed article. 10 ways to dispose of a dead body if you really need to.
Let me tell you something about this guy. He looks guilty. You know what I'm talking about?
Like, absolutely.
Can you see a picture of him?
Yeah.
Was he expecting a YouTube video to pop up to help him?
Yeah.
Smash the like and subscribe.
What do those searches get you? Because remember, we searched how to...
I'll tell you off the air.
Because we were discussing whether they said in Goodfellas you need lime or lie to help.
I think, I think lime is what I heard, but that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've searched that.
Well, the key
Judge,
is...
It's just because of Goodfellas.
The key is to do it now.
Yeah, do it now.
And then bank that
Five,
info.
5-6 years later.
Yeah, you'll be in the clear.
Yeah.
I'll reel through these.
Okay.
How long for someone to be missing to inherit?
So do it when your kids are like 12 or 13.
And then by 18.
Because, you know, once they're moving out of the house, then you can do it.
Yeah.
It's hard to kill your wife when you have kids running in and out.
How long for someone to be missing to inherit? Clunky. Can you throw away body parts? How long does DNA last? This is all before noon, by the way, on New Year's Day. How to clean blood from wooden floor, luminol to detect blood, basically just your whole...
Yeah, but if I'm his lawyer, I'm saying, of course the guy who framed him would type that in
his
search.
That's right.
And now we got to find that guy. He's a one-armed man, and that's why his typing is so crappy. Through that, with grammar and punctuation alone, we know he's a one-armed man.
Who's barely literate.
And he's on the lam. Why are we wasting time talking about this?
The next day, he took a break around noon. Next day, hacksaw, best tool to dismember.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say coping saw. I mean, I used to be a carpenter, but that's just me. Maybe a dovetail saw. Maybe a backdraw saw. I would definitely not use a hypoid saw. That is a mess. Do not use a contractor saw. Do not use a compound radial sliding saw. Don't use a bandsaw. I mean, a bandsaw would be good if you had a facility, but out in the woods, no, don't use a bandsaw. I would say hacksaw, dovetail, coping saw would probably be the most effective. Or you could just go with a circular finish saw. I mean, if that's your thing, but I'm not.
I feel like if you're friends with Adam Carolla, you could get this done. Because you wouldn't have to get on the internet.
Right.
I would say compound sliding miter saw, but that's a nice piece of equipment.
You don't want to ruin
that one up. No.
Right.
Right. Because you got to throw this in the river when you're done. You know what I mean? And a good, like, 10-inch, 60-tooth carbide tip thing, compound miter, that could set you back like 400 big ones. And you don't want to throw that in the river. But hacksaw, that's $9. Dovetail, $8-$9. Coping, same price.
Maybe you don't want to cheap out on this, Adam.
Well, but you're throwing the crap in the river.
But you want to make sure it's done right.
This is the big game.
Wouldn't you hate to be caught because you went, you know?
You went with like
bargain.
Bargain basement. Yeah, go with the Bosch or.
And you're going to get the inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
You've already searched that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now let me tell you about this guy. Have you seen what this guy looks like? He looks dumb and guilty.
He does.
He looks dumb and guilty.
Let's see.
And every woman I know looks at him and goes, oh, look at him. Look at him. Look what he did. Look what he did.
Some women are looking at him. They're excited about it.
No, they're going, look at that. He
Somebody
did it.
Somebody is.
He did it. Look at that guy. But before we trust women, remember about 20 minutes ago, they saw Michael Avenatti, and they're like, that guy's going to be the next president. Look at him. Look at that guy. He's a genius. He'd go on The View, and they're like, when are you going to run for president? So women can be pushed by the looks just as well as men can.
I don't know that I found Avenatti or Avenatti. Is he attractive?
He was attractive to women, and don't pretend you're not gay. He had a very strong jawline, and he had very blue eyes, and women loved him. They're like, listen to that guy. Look at his jaw.
And he was trusting a porn star. He wasn't judging her. That was helpful, too.
That's right. But he was anti-Trump. So they were like, that guy's going to fight Trump. We got to vote him in. And they're all up in Avenatti's grill. And now his cell partner's going to be this guy.
Yes, he's going to jail.
I like that we think that prisons are so limited and coincidental. Like, he's going to be having a partner with what? Yeah, the guy with the crypto bit. Yeah, that guy. Yeah, he's going to be cell partner. It's like, I don't think that's how prisons work. It'd be a wild coincidence. It'd be like we only had like four cells.
The celebrity wing.
Yeah.
The celebrity segment of the prison.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we appreciate your time today, Adam Carolla. You have a website. It is adamcarolla.com. You click on Working Blue. And you can see the details for the big event this weekend. It's at the Sheraton in Dallas. There's a live podcast tonight. There's stand-up and a show by John Popper tomorrow night. It's a meet and greet, so go check it out at adamcarolla.com.
Man, I love hearing you just start riffing on movies and such, just because it reminds me of my favorite Adam Carolla fake movie, The Island Where You Would Put Pedophiles.
Oh, pedophile.
Yeah.
Pedophile.
Pedophile. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a strong one.
Because we have Pregnancy Island here we've talked about.
Yeah.
That's where we'll put our wives if she becomes pregnant. We just think women should all be on...
The treatment? Top
and
notch.
One island.
Relaxing. I mean, it's going to be great for them. This is not just going to be some like...
And then there's a workout
situation.
Facility for...
Workout.
Because she's going to... You'll see her again in...
2 months after.
11 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
she
this,
gets pregnant, we send her to Pregnancy Island, but pedophile. Sorry.
Well,
it's where we send the pedophiles.
Yeah.
And the pedos.
Little St. James is available if you want to escape.
Historically.
Because you can't get it out of them.
No.
It's ingrained in you. It's a sickness.
Yeah. So we'll just put them together. We'll sequester them, which seems like a good idea until the plane that's coming back from the Cub Scout Jamboree
crash.
In Antigua crash lands on pedophile.
Oh no!
Now we would send the Marines, but we have not recognized it officially, right? The government
has been slowly
sending these people at night, so they can't intervene. But one man can.
Steven Seagal.
His name is Steven Seagal.
Right,
and he's breaking protocol because he's in the war room, and they're like, "We can't do it."
No, I'm out of that game.
We have to send the best.
I'm out of that game.
Show. You're back.
I'm
in.
I'm a cook now.
Cut to blowing up Zodiac.
Get someone else.
No,
I don't play
you're the
that.
Best. You're the best.
All right, one more.
AdamCarolla.com. Good times.
Yep.